Do you have something that you're hoping for? Some kind of dream that you have just wished that it would be finally answered and fulfilled? Maybe it's something about your own life, about your experiences. Maybe it's about your family. Maybe it's someone that is sick, or you just hope that they get better. Maybe it's for your children or grandchildren that you hope that they have a rich and fulfilling kind of life. Maybe it's to win that house that you've just bought the lottery tickets in, or maybe it's for something about peace in Ukraine. Maybe it's about reconciliation in your own family or within our nation. Whatever those hopes are, they can sometimes just be stirred up within us and we long to see them fulfilled. And they can seem to almost be at reach, almost we're able to grasp them. And then suddenly something happens and everything seems to be just dashed. And we just go into this pit of despair, as if nothing good can ever come again into the world. We can imagine what those two disciples, Cleopas and perhaps his wife, there's another Cleopas and Mary mentioned in the Gospel of John. Another tradition says that it's Luke himself who's the second disciple walking down that path. But as they walk with their heads bowed low, as they kind of try and make sense of all that had just unfolded, all of their hopes, we'd hoped that Jesus was the one, that he was the Messiah. And what was the point of a Messiah but to set Israel free from all of that slavery, all of that experience of being oppressed and downtrodden by the Roman oppressors? But those who were the liberators do not end up crucified on a cross. So it was clear in their minds that Jesus was not the long hoped for Messiah. So our own hopes have been completely and utterly dashed. And so as they have this conversation, as they walk along the road, and in the Greek, it's the word that we get homily, kind of having this discussion, this going backwards and forwards. When you look at different translations, you see, though, that there's something a little bit more heated in the discussion. And at times, there's a word that's also used in the Greek of antiballon. And it has that sense of antiballistic, like it's a sense of the ball being tossed about, the missiles being fired from one side to another. And we know that kind of argument as well, where one person saying, no, it must have been like this, and someone else saying, no, it has to be like this. And when there's just this clashing of heads. And so it seems to be this homily, this opening, this breaking open of a discussion, but it's a bit more heated, a bit more dynamic at times as well. And we've experienced both of those realities in our lives as they ponder and go along. And then suddenly we're told that there's this stranger who's there. And they're not able to see him. They're not able to recognize him, and we don't know exactly why, but it seems that just is kept until later on. And so as they walk along, perhaps there's all kinds of fear that they would be holding. Is this one of them? Is this one of those people that are likely to dob us in, that will report us to the Roman authorities? Because the disciples were so fearful that what happened to Jesus would also happen to all of his associates, that just as in the past, the Romans hadn't been content just to kill the leader of a rebellion. They'd rounded up everybody that was associated. And we know that from Christian history and Roman history, that was one of the things that did eventually transpire. And so these two disciples would have been pretty cautious about revealing too much to this stranger who walked with them for fear that he was one of them. He was somebody that might report them. So they couch their words very carefully to make sure that what they say doesn't convict them too much about being faithful disciples of Jesus. But as they walk along, having this conversation, tossing these ideas backwards and forwards, where are they headed? Emmaus. We don't know where Emmaus is. That's the simple answer. There doesn't seem to be anywhere in the first century that specifically had that reference. There's a reference in the book of Maccabees to a place similar to Emmaus, where one of the battles kind of happened. there's all kinds of Christian sites now, or sites that would contend to be the place. And when you go on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, they might take you to two or three of these different sites. But what is significant about Emmaus is that it's not Jerusalem. The Gospel of Luke is very clear that Jerusalem is the center. It begins in the temple. It begins in Jerusalem with the revelations about Zechariah receiving the announcement that his wife Elizabeth would give birth to a son. And Mary and Joseph, of course, have to take the child Jesus to Jerusalem, to the temple, to be presented there. And that whole sense of Jerusalem being the driving heartbeat of the Gospel of Luke. You know, at 9:51, there's this decision that Jesus takes to resolutely set his face towards Jerusalem. And then five more times between chapter 9 and chapter 19, we get these continued reminders that we're on the way to Jerusalem. And then the gospel ends with the disciples. After the ascension of Jesus, they all gather together to pray in the temple in Jerusalem. So Jerusalem is the place where you're meant to be. And so where are these two disciples? They're going as quickly as they can away from Jerusalem. And also, you might remember that one of the other parables that's only found in the Gospel of Luke is the story of the Good Samaritan. And all of those people are heading away from Jerusalem. So it's that sense that when we are heading away from Jerusalem, we're doing the wrong thing. And yet, Jesus joins them on this road. Even when we're doing the wrong thing, even when we're having this pretty heated discussion and conversation, Jesus seems quite content, like he was last week, to be there to invite Thomas to put your fingers here in the wounds in my hands, put your hand in the wound on my side. He doesn't seem to be scared or afraid of our questions, our doubts, our confusion. In the midst of all of those things, Jesus is just there sharing with those disciples. And as he opens the scriptures and begins to indicate from Moses, from the first five books of the Torah, through to the end of the Ketuvim, the writings of Chronicles, all of that scope, not just giving us particular texts and particular proofs, but telling the story of God's people, telling us about the wonders of what God has done, that God has always been there as part of our lives, never separate, never afraid. He's just walked and journeyed with the people, even when they turned away, even when they weren't faithful to the covenant, even when they tried to do things that seemed good in their own eyes rather than things that were good according to the will and purpose of God. God continued to journey with his people. And that Jesus would have reminded the people that it's not when we avoid suffering, that he never promises to remove our suffering. We'll still get sick. We'll still have things that go wrong in our lives. But no matter where we are, Jesus will be there journeying faithfully with us, walking along that road, and that it's in the midst of that suffering, the Messiah who will not come to overcome and be defeated by suffering, but a Messiah who will, in this very act of suffering for us, out of love, will invite us more deeply into the life of God's family and God's people. And so today, we can indeed allow the Lord to continue to journey with us. We can allow him to speak the words of the gospel, the words of the scriptures into our hearts. We can allow those words to burn within us. But it's only when we gather for the Eucharist, it's only when the bread is broken and the wine poured out that we actually then have our eyes opened. And it's in that moment, it's in that experience of suddenly realizing that God is here, present among us, loving us and calling us and inviting us into life. And sometimes in that instant that he disappears. Because so often our faith is like that. When we think, yes, I finally get it. I finally understand what this is all about. And in that moment, oh, hang on. How did that quite work? And we can't quite understand that experience. And it's only in the later reflection and the later telling of the story and as we share that with others that we're able to make any sense whatsoever of what God has been doing all along. Let's continue to walk that journey, whether it's away from Jerusalem or whether it's on our way back to the community. Let's be content and reminded that God will continue to walk with us. God will continue to journey with us. He will continue to break open His Word. He will continue to invite us to the feast, to allow His body to be broken. He's allow His blood to be poured out. Because that love and that desire and that devotion that He has for us is always to draw us back into life and community, to allow us to experience His presence. So let's give thanks that God continues to work with us, to walk with us, and to open the Word of God, to allow us to be fed and nourished by all of His life that He pours out for us today.